My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Good morning. With us on the line now is Mark Simmons, an expert trainer in creativity, insight and innovation. He's the author of Breakdown and Repair. Mark hopes that talking candidly about his own mental health breakdown will allow others to realise the importance of talking about mental health at work and how excessive stress can negatively impact creativity and performance. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much, Hannah. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. So can you tell us a little bit about your own situation and journey and what happened with you? Hello.
And I'm a 56-year-old bloke coming towards the end of my career. And as you mentioned, I work in the area of creativity and innovation as a trainer. But back in the day, I experienced a big blip. I had a breakdown back in 2001, which was caused by excessive stress in the workplace. And it kind of crept up on me a little bit like Chinese water torture, where you have that sort of drip, drip, drip effect. Mm. And just one day you get up in front of your computer and the computer simply says no. And at that point, I simply broke down. And it just sort of went from worse to worse. I took 3 or 4 months off work. And the problem was I was, in fact, setting up a new business with two other colleagues. So it became painfully acute and painfully difficult all round. And unfortunately, it sort of ended in a bad place whereby sort of 3 or 4 months in, nothing seemed to get better. No medication, no talking therapy seemed to work. And I eventually made an attempt on my own life. But it was proved to be the turning point, because from that point onwards, sort of this is now 2001, I sort of realized that life was more about just balance and family and enjoying yourself rather than simply getting stuck in front of a computer all day long.
Mm, yes, it can happen to a lot of people. That there's a phrase about live to work or work to live, and what a difference those two things are.
Yeah, and I was without doubt, you know, I was back in the day of sort of the famous Wall Street film, Gordon Gekko Lunches for Wimps. You know, I was of that mindset, which is ridiculous, to be honest. And I certainly kind of wasn't working to live. I was simply living to work, as you say.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that you did to turn your life around?
Well, I think it was some basic things, to be honest. I mean, it was little things that seemed not unusual, like, okay, I'm now going to start to go back and exercising every day. I'm going to make sure I sleep properly, eat properly, I socialize. So putting the little things in place that just people think, well, isn't that just what everyone should do? But it's surprising how you can forget to do the little things in life. The bigger thing, however, was to try to understand a bit more about what I was like as a person and try and find a job environment that fitted me. So I found out sort of at that time that I was not really suited to the corporate environment, and I was more introverted than I was extroverted. So I said to myself, well, okay, well, let's try and find a work environment that suits your personality. Mm. And at that point, I made a really great decision to go independent, to work for myself. And I found that the pressure of maybe not having a regular income was far less than the pressure of working in a big corporate. So since 2001, I really have had a sort of career-wise a really great run of things. And I think the biggest thing I did was simply find the right job environment for me and my personality.
That's so important, isn't it? Because we spend so many hours and years of our lives working, or most of us do. So to try and find something that ideally you enjoy or that you're good at, or it makes such a difference.
I think so, Hannah. And I think, you know, why wait until you get to 40 to make that decision? I mean, I've got a younger son, Jack, who's 20, who's come out of school and said, look, Dad, I don't want to pursue a university career. I don't want to go into big corporate life, and I know exactly what I want to do. And I just think if you can learn that much earlier, well, why not?
Yeah.
So get more self-awareness at age 20 rather than try to find it at age 40 when you've kind of wasted 20 years doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great thing. I think far too many parents push their kids into university when they either don't want to be at university or don't really know what they want to study or what they want to do. And university really isn't for everybody and isn't necessary for everybody either.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not going off track here, but my son, you know, he wants to become an entrepreneur. So he says, well, why do I go to university to become an entrepreneur? I mean, entrepreneurs don't go to university. So it's just making the point here that I think that if you can give your children just that sense of self-awareness early on, you're going to spare them the pain and torture of mental ill health as they go through their lives, I believe.
Mm, yeah, definitely. So what are some of the kind of tips that you offer in the book for people?
Some of the tips?
Yes.
I think I said the main tip I'm offering is to try to prevent yourself getting into trouble, particularly in the work context, is make sure you find the right kind of occupation, okay? But even if you find the right kind of occupation, once you're in it, look after yourself in terms of your mental and physical well-being. So you can find the right occupation, but then you might find yourself basically still not looking after yourself and therefore sort of slipping down that slippery slope. I think that's one tip. I think the other thing is from the other side. So if you are a carer for somebody who's got mental ill health problems, it's very important to understand that how they think and feel is quite different to somebody who is well, so to speak. So when I was at my worst, my brain had literally broken, if that makes sense. So a little bit like when you break a leg and you can't walk. Mm. When you become depressed or when you become mentally unwell, you cannot think straight. The sort of the neurotransmitters are not talking to one another. So I think as a carer, the big thing is to understand that and not to necessarily talk the language of rational. So when you are ill, it's often not helpful to sort of be very rational and logical in terms of speaking to someone. It's more a question of speaking the language of irrational and just listening and empathizing and hugging and holding. And just being there for someone is often all they actually want. So I think there are lessons in the book for both the sufferer and also for the carer.
Yes, it's a very important point that, because it can be very difficult to know what to say or what to do when living with someone who's suffering with mental health. You know, if you've not experienced it yourself, it can be very frustrating, you know, and sometimes you might want to say things like, oh, cheer up, for goodness sake,
yeah.
which obviously isn't helpful.
That's exactly, and Hannah, I mean, my wife Mel would, if she was here, she'd be saying exactly the same thing. So my wife Mel is wonderful, a wonderful person, but she comes from Planet Rational. Mm. So when I had my illness back in the day, her first reaction was kind of pull yourself together and, okay, why don't you simply take your to-do list, Mark, and cross off every item except for three and then get on with those three items. All completely sensible, but in a sense, it's just not quite speaking the right language that you need to speak to someone that's mentally unwell.
Yeah. So as much as the person suffering with mental health should be seeking help in some way, the person, the carer, the person who's living with them, as you say, they should do a bit of research as well in terms of how they should be dealing with the situation.
Further, I mean, one step further, man, I say Mel, to her great credit, sort of at some point, she said, look, I can't quite cope with this and I need help. So what she then did is not just research, as you say, but she went and sought help. So she then started seeing a lovely psychologist called Holly, who literally gave her the tools by which she could then basically deal with me in a more effective way.
Mm.
So I think it's recognizing, if you do live on Planet Rational, is how can you get help so that you can start to speak the language of irrational.
Yes, that's great. Well, if people want more information, they can obviously get a copy of the book. It's called Breakdown and Repair, A Father's Tale of Stress and Success. And I presume, is everything okay with you now? Have you literally come out the other side?
Thank you very much. Yes, I have done. I mean, the one last thing to say before I leave you is that the book itself is not just about my experiences. It's also about looking after my daughter, Emily, who had anorexia. So the one thing that it taught me was actually by going through it yourself, you can then help other people. So the book Breakdown and Repair, the repair bit is as much about me being able to help other people, which cemented my repair. And in this case, it was with my daughter helping her get through her anorexia.
Oh, fantastic. That must have been amazing for you to be able to do that, having been through a similar situation yourself.
Yes, and both stories have happy endings. I'm doing fine and my daughter is thriving and surviving in London.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mark Simmons, thank you very much for joining us and Merry Christmas to you all.
Yes, and to you, Hannah, and to all your viewers, and all the best to yourself.
Thank you. Bye-bye.